Welcome to KUI News, the collaboration between the University of Idaho's own student-operated radio station, KUI, and its editorially independent student newspaper, The Argonaut. Stay up to date on everything going on your campus and beyond every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Once in the morning at 9:30 a.m., and once after you're actually awake at 3:30 p.m. Welcome to KUI News for Wednesday, March 27th, 2013. I'm Dylan Brown. Upcoming on today's broadcast, Andrew Deskins talks to the members of the University of Idaho Law School who helped bring the Navajo Supreme Court to Idaho. Caitlin Crasso previews this year's version of the annual Tuni Mipu powwow. In sports, Anthony Kuipers recaps a largely successful but disappointing weekend for the Idaho men's tennis team. Aaron Wolf recaps the Vandal women's tennis team's loss to ranked Denver University. And Kevin Bingaman takes a look back at the men's golf performance at the Desert Shootout this past weekend. From RAR, our weekly arts and entertainment insert, Emily Varstra previews this year's Masquerade, UI's very own fashion show. And finally on KUI News, Kason Christensen has our view on why President Nellis' goal of 16,000 students in Moscow by 2020 should leave with Nellis as he heads to Texas Tech University this summer. But first, this news. Thanks to the efforts of members of the University of Idaho Law School, a Supreme Court without Ginsburg, Scalia, or Roberts came to Moscow. With a look into the Supreme Court of the Navajo Nation session that was held here on campus, Andrew Deskins has this story.
The University of Idaho Law School became the first non-Ivy League university to host the Navajo Nation Supreme Court last Thursday. The court came to UI thanks to the efforts of second-year law student and member of the Navajo Nation, Naomi Gilmore, the Native American Law Student Association, and College of Law professor Angelique Eaglewoman. During their visit, the court heard oral arguments in Neptune Leasing Incorporated versus Mountain States Petroleum Corporation and Nacogdoches Oil and Gas Incorporated, and hosted a forum where they explained the principles and traditions that guide them. Gilmore said the process started after she met the justices at the Native American Pre-Law Undergraduate Scholars Program. She said she knew that the court had hosted oral arguments at law schools like Yale and Harvard before. "I just asked myself, why not Idaho?" Gilmore said. During the morning session, the court heard arguments from Neptune and Nacogdoches, as well as the amicus argument from the Assistant Attorney General for the Navajo Nation, Paul Spruhan. Neptune argued that the case should be decided by Navajo courts, while Nacogdoches argued it should be decided in Texas courts. Spruhan said the Navajo Nation did not have an opinion based on the shaky factual record of the case. "The last lease we have in this case is from 1974, Spruhan said. "We don't know what happened since then. It could be that the three parties are arguing over something none of them have any right to." After hearing the arguments, the court took the matter under advisement. A decision will be handed down in the next few weeks. During the forum, Chief Justice Herb Yazzie said it is important to educate the public about tribal law in order to preserve their way of life. "Whenever we decide, we have to educate the public, meaning we have to explain why a particular ancient law, a particular ancient value, applies to a case," Yazzie said. "Our structure of government, at first glance people notice it is a three-branch government, and the assumption is that it is based on the American government, with its constitution, and with its branches. It is not. We do have the concept of branches, but the structure is based on ancient laws about leadership of people. If you dig deep enough, there is actually a fourth component, and that's what we call, in Navajo, Naye, meaning those who have the responsibility of protecting. In ancient society, there has always been the protector, and you may think of the warrior society." He said the judicial branch administers justice based on ancient laws. "Laws don't necessarily come solely from human beings," Yazzie said. "Laws come from the Creator, the Holy People, Mother Earth, the universe. This is where laws come from, and human beings can never change that. They are absolute." Associate Justice Elnor Shirley said the sovereign Navajo Nation occupies roughly the same amount of land as the state of West Virginia and has almost 300,000 residents. She said they have 11 district courts and the Supreme Court. Associate Justice William Platero explained some of the workings of the Navajo court system. He said they have several volumes of codes and statutes, and that procedural rules are based on the federal rules. Lawyers must be licensed by their state bar association, as well as the Navajo Nation Bar. He said judges are appointed for life. I was appointed and confirmed in June of 2008. I went through my 2-year probation period and became a permanent judge. So it's an appointment for the rest of my life, as long as I behave myself, Platero said. Platero mentioned the traditional Navajo peacemaking courts, which are used to settle disputes between family members. He said peacemakers are usually community elders, and that the peacemaking courts are a cultural way of settling disputes based on respect. Platero mentioned the tradition of asking for your family's blessing before becoming a judge. I had to ask my mother, my father, if they were okay with me becoming a judge. Within Navajo society, at a meeting like this, I would be expected to introduce myself by telling you who my mother and father are and where I am from. I had to ask my parents if they were willing to be known in the public because of my judgeship, Platero said. Platero said if they had any reservations about being known, he could not have become a judge. Chief Justice Yazzie said the closest translation for justice in Navajo means at peace. He said justice is commonly considered to mean that the offender is punished or hurt as retribution for the hurt of the victim. He said within the Navajo system, it is important to restore the offender within the community, that there is more to justice than just punishment. He said the criminal justice system is foreign to Navajo, and that it was imposed on them by the federal government. The United States military were our prison guards at a concentration camp, and they imposed a lot of practices before they would allow prisoners free to go back to their lands, Yazzie said. One of them was that this is how you resolve disputes. You select a person wearing a black robe. You have these champions present the arguments. The person in the black robe makes a decision. That's the imposition of the criminal justice system. Yazzie also mentioned his time as Attorney General for the Navajo Nation. He said the federal government would ask them for the nation's position in cases where Navajo were being tried outside the reservation and the death penalty was being sought. We consistently said, we are never going to recommend capital punishment. We can't, Yazzie said, because it's not in our system. It's not in our value system. It is not in our ancient laws that a government can put a person to death. Yazzie said it is a struggle to get the government to acknowledge that they have Indian nations they have to deal with. We made an agreement recognizing each other years ago. It is important that we uphold that agreement and that recognition. This government that you profess to represent in North America can only survive if you give respect to all Native people, because we know one thing, the American government is totally dependent on diversity, Yazzie said. When we don't get that respect, we have to do what we have to do to survive. Professor Eaglewoman mentioned the International Forum to get the American government to come to its senses. Maybe that's what it will take. Gilmore said the lack of recognition of Indian nations extends to education as well. If you read the history, it's amazing that we, as Native Americans, made it through all the travesties, and I think that maybe that does have a lot to do with why people don't know much about Native Americans. We're taken out of history books, Gilmore said. I'm not sure why people don't talk about these things. Maybe they feel uncomfortable. But I think through education and being positive, we can come to a time where we are going to be able to respect each other as individuals. That's something I was hoping would happen by bringing the Navajo Nation Supreme Court to Idaho. For KUOI News, I'm Andrew Deskins.
Long before settlers turned the Palouse into wheat fields, the Nez Perce tribe called Northern Idaho home. The tribe celebrates their ancient roots in this area every spring with a Tunimipu powwow. With a look at this year's festivities, Caitlin Krassel filed this report.
Tunimipu means where the deer goes to lose its spots in the Nez Perce language, Nimipu. And true to powwow tradition, it is a celebration of culture and life. The University of Idaho Native American Student Association will host the 14th annual Tunimipu Powwow, March 30th through 31st at the Moscow Middle School Gym. Effie Hernandez, president of the Native American Student Association, said the event, which is free and open to the public, is a great way to experience a different culture. Yolanda Taylor, program coordinator for the Native American Student Center, said the event has evolved since it began, but it's a gathering, a celebration. Taylor said there are a variety of categories and age groups for the competitive dances, including traditional, jingle, and fancy. Dances also encompass a variety of themes, including love, friendship, prayer, and honor. In addition to the competitive dances, there are intertribal dances where everyone is welcome on the floor. She said these dances are a good way to learn more about the culture and be involved in the powwow. She said people are also welcome to get close to the drummers to observe what they're doing during the competitive dances. The dancers and drummers come from a variety of Native American nations. Taylor said the styles of dance have evolved over time, and some allow the dancers to be more original and creative than others. Hernandez said her personal favorite category is the men's fancy because they are fun to watch and the dancers express their personality and creativity through the dance. Hernandez said the regalia worn by the dancers is another way many people are able to express themselves. And just like the dances, the style depends on the type of dance. There will be three grand entries, two on Saturday at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m., and one on Sunday at 1 p.m. Taylor said grand entry is when they will honor the flags and open the floor. There will also be an appreciation dinner at 5 p.m. on Saturday, as well as an Easter egg hunt on Sunday morning. All events are open to the public. For KUOI News, I'm Caitlin Krasselt.
That was today's featured artist, and they are called The Men. Their album is called New Moon, and that track was called Without a Face. First up in sports, the undefeated run for the Vandal men's tennis team is over, after a close loss to rivals Boise State this past weekend. With a recap of the Vandals' performance, Anthony Kuipers has this story.
The Idaho men's tennis team endured its second loss of the season, but also added two more to the win column in Boise, March 22nd and 23rd. Idaho competed in the Boise State Spring Hill Suites Classic over the weekend, where they defeated Southern Mississippi 4-2 and Utah 4-1 before losing to number 46th-ranked Boise State 4-2. Seniors Abid Akbar and Marius Chersti paired up to win the number one doubles match 8-5 against Southern Mississippi, while Cristobal Salazar and Jose Bendek took the number two match 8-5 as well. Sophomore Dmitry Perevoshikov and freshman Matt Odinetto lost 8-5 at number 3. Perevoshikov lost his first singles match of the season at number 1 against Southern Miss 6-4 and 6-3 in their first competition of the tournament. His loss did not matter in the end, though. Idaho won 4 out of 6 singles matches, including the number 2 through number 4 positions. Senior Abid Akbar won at number 2, Chersti won at number 3, and Jose Bendek earned a victory at number 4. Sophomore Cesar Torres lost at number 5, and Salazar won at number 6. The Vandals performed even better against Utah in their second match of the day. Idaho again took the doubles point after Akbar and Chersti won at number 1, and Salazar and Bendek won at number 2. Seniors Ivan Crujanto and Jake Knox lost at number 3, 8-6. This time, Idaho won the top three singles matches, with Perevoshikov winning handily at number 1, Akbar at number 2, and Chersti at number 3. Salazar lost at number 6, while the number 4 and 5 matches did not finish. The Vandals were on track for an upset win over BSU when they swept the doubles match. Philip Fichtel teamed up with Perevoshikov at the number 3 match, and they went on to win 8-5. Akbar and Chersti continued their torrid pace they displayed during the weekend, as did Salazar and Bendek. Both pairs won the top two matches to give Idaho the doubles point. The Broncos rallied back, however, by winning 4 out of 5 singles matches. Perevoshikov lost again at number 1 to number 25-ranked Andrew Bettles. Akbar lost at number 2, Chersti fell in 3 sets at number 3, and Cesar Torres lost at number 5. Idaho will take on New Mexico State this Friday in Moscow. For KUI News, I'm Anthony Kuipers.
The competition got much stiffer for the Idaho men's golf team as they paid a visit to Arizona for the Desert Shootout this past weekend. With a look back at the standout performers and team totals, here's Kevin Bingaman.
The Idaho men's golf team finished a third and final day at a Desert Shootout in Goodyear, Arizona, with a 296 to land in a tie for 8th place at the tournament. Last week, the Vandals finished a Jackrabbit Invitational in second, but this week the tournament had a much tougher field. Idaho finished in a tie with Tulsa, Air Force, and Kansas. BYU won the 54-hole tournament, led by Zachary Blair, who blazed through the final day of competition, shooting a 64 to win the individual medal with a score of 15 under. Blair was 7 strokes ahead of his nearest competitor, which was Wichita State's Hunter Sparks, who finished at 7 under. Illinois' Thomas Peters rounded out the top 3 at 3 under. Denver, the host of the tournament, finished in second, 10 strokes behind BYU. Baylor finished in third, and Wichita State finished in fourth. Idaho's Gordon Webb, who finished second in last week's tournament, earning him the WAC Golfer Player of the Week award, had another solid performance, finishing in a tie for sixth place. Aaron Cockerill also finished high for Idaho with a 1-over performance to finish in a tie for 16th. The Vandals ended the first day of competition on Thursday in a tie for 6th place, shooting their low round for the tournament. The Vandals ended the second day in 9th, but managed to climb one more spot on the third day to end in 8th. Idaho coach John Means said his team has been progressing this season, but like with most young teams, it doesn't come all at once. The Vandals will be back in action on April 8th when they travel to Scottsdale, Arizona for the Wyoming Classic. Idaho will then play one more tournament on April 19th through the 21st before the WAC Championship, which starts on April 29th in Las Vegas. For KUI News, I'm Kevin Bingaman.
The Idaho women's tennis team also had a disappointing weekend, losing to WAC rivals Denver University. Aaron Wolf takes a look back at the women's loss to the ranked Pioneers.
With the exception of Victoria Lozano's dominant performance in number 2 singles and number 1 doubles with teammate Almedina Sanz, Vandal women's tennis couldn't match up with number 58 Denver, losing 6-1 March 22nd in Arlington, Texas. Lozano defeated Denver's Caroline Schnell, who posted an overall singles record of 17-16 last year. With this win, Lozano is up to 5 singles wins on the season and has not lost in doubles since February 10th when the Vandals were swept by Boise State 7-0. The rest of the Vandals were unable to capture the doubles point despite Lozano's win, losing 2 out of 3 sets. Denver player Schnell and freshman Catherine Hughes have won 3 doubles matches in a row on the season, defeating Alejandra Lozano and Sophie Vickers, 8-6. Both Beatrice Flores and Baylen Barcelona forced both their singles matches to 3 sets but could not hold off the Pioneers. Vickers was defeated in 2 straight sets by senior Stevie Raff, as the Pioneers advanced to 9-3 on the spring season. The Vandals are 0-3 against ranked opponents, and after this match slipped down to 6-8 overall against their first WAC opponent of the year. In a little less than 2 weeks, the Vandals will travel down to San Antonio to challenge 3 other WAC teams, New Mexico State, University of Texas, San Antonio, and Louisiana Tech. The Vandals make up a canceled match against Gonzaga on April 10th in Spokane, Washington, before coming back home on April 12th to play Seattle University, San Jose State, and Texas State. In total, of the 8 matches left in the Vandal schedule, 7 of them will be against WAC opponents. San Jose State has the best record in the WAC overall, sitting at 10-4 with a 3-game winning streak, beating Louisiana Tech on March 22nd. The Spartans have appeared on the national rankings multiple times this year. Louisiana Tech and Denver are fighting for second place with comparable records, while the Vandals trail in 5th place, 1-6 on the road, 3-1 in Pullman and Moscow, and 2-1 in neutral territory. With Sophie Vickers and Rita Bermudez back, the Vandals have won 3 of their last 4 matches. The Vandals will have until April 5th to prepare for the weekend tournament in San Antonio as they look for their 7th win on the season.
That song was titled Electric, a second taste of the album New Moon from a band simply known as The Men. today's featured artist here on KUI News. Idaho is a long way from the runways of New York City, but despite the sweatpants, that does not mean fashion has been put on the back burner. This year's Masquerade Fashion Show will showcase the efforts of local student designers, and Emily Varstra sat down with the event's organizers.
Moscow's hottest fashion show is less than a month away, back with more one-of-a-kind designs from some of University of Idaho's very own student artists. The third annual Masquerade Wearable Art Fashion Show will be held at 8 p.m. Saturday, April 20th, at the Eastside Marketplace Convention Center, the same weekend of the UI Moms Weekend. UI Clothing, Textiles, and Design seniors Crystal Chuong, Kate Mills, and Molly Wanacott are the co-directors of the event being produced by Bodycon, a student club founded by the trio. The Masquerade first launched under Antiques by Russ owner Russ Wheelhouse, Chuong said. Russ has a vision of upcycled artwork going down the runway, she said. He likes the idea of sustainable items being made into clothing, and that is what they really focus the event around. This year's fashion show will highlight both upcycled and non-recycled designs from students and community members in Moscow and surrounding communities. In the past, designs using garbage bags, coffee filters, newspapers, candy wrappers, and other reusable materials have all been featured in the show. Mills said they are expecting close to 40 models to debut designs from about 25 different designers. She said they sold 200 tickets for last year's fashion show, and she's anticipating between 200 to 300 tickets will be sold this year. Ticket prices are $12 for front row seats, $10 for second row, $8 for third row, and $5 for general admission to the event. Students with their ID will receive a $2 discount on the first through third row seats, or $5 for general admission. Volunteer hair and makeup artists from Essence Salon will be backstage at the event, prepping and glamming the models for a walk down the runway. Bodycon has also teamed up with Moose Lodge for hors d'oeuvres and drinks at the show. Truong said they are having a 21 and up after party at Nosh, where there will be drink specials and food specials along with great music. For KUOI News, I'm Emily Vartstra.
It was always going to be a lofty goal, but when President Dwayne Nellis announced that Moscow would be the home of 16,000 vandals by 2020, he anticipated being here longer than 5 years. The goal remains on the table, however, as Nellis leaves for Texas Tech this summer. But with our view, Kason Christensen says that considering this year's enrollment numbers, Idaho should let 16,000 leave with Nellis.
When University of Idaho President M. Dwayne Nellis started at UI, he announced an enrollment goal, that Idaho would host 16,000 students by the year 2020. Now, as Nellis will start his presidency at Texas Tech University June 15th, it is time to examine his goals. The university released spring 2013 enrollment numbers Friday, which showed 11,551 students enrolled for the spring semester, down from 12,493 in the fall semester. The numbers show UI is not growing fast enough to reach Nellis's goal. Freshman enrollment increased 0.1% in the fall, and overall enrollment was up 1.4%. Idaho needs a little more than four times that amount during the next 4 years to get back on track. Not likely with a 7.5% decrease in enrollment between fall 2012 and spring 2013. The goal of 16,000 students is admirable. More students enrolled means more money and resources, more graduates, and more national attention. But 16,000 by 2020 might be too much growth too fast. UI needs to focus on building itself up by improving its infrastructure, bringing in and retaining quality faculty and staff, and maintaining an overall quality education. After all, one of UI's biggest draws is its close-knit atmosphere and reputation as a vandal family. UI is a small enough school that students can walk across campus and see people they know. Class sizes are relatively small, and professors are accessible. At the same time, it is large enough to be a renowned research university and attracts diverse students from various countries and cultures. Focusing on improving what UI already has will increase retention and draw new students. The foundation of an excellent education and reputation as Idaho's flagship university will allow UI to grow at a reasonable rate without putting pressure on admissions to meet an unrealistic goal. As the search commences for a new president, UI should build its strengths and fix its weaknesses. After all, if you build it, they will come. For KUOI News, I'm Kason Christensen.
I'm not afraid to die.
one last track from the men and their album New Moon. That was the album's closer, Supermoon. Check out the men and all the best new music not on your Top 40 station, right here on 89.3 FM in Moscow. That's going to do it for KOI News for Wednesday, March 27th, 2013. But the Argonaut doesn't stop here.
Check out your student newspaper
on Facebook,
Twitter,
and Pinterest.
Also, be sure to check out the rest of Student Media's outlets, including...
RAR.
RAR.
RAR. RAR is the Argonaut's weekly arts and entertainment tab that showcases everything from reviews to quirky features. Find RAR inside the Argonaut every Friday and online at uiargonaut.com, as well as on Facebook and Twitter by following at RAR Weekly.
Can't get enough Argonaut photos? Look at online exclusive photos and more on our Facebook page at facebook.com/uiargonaut.
Hangry? Hungry? Parched? Craving something sweet? Visit the Argonaut's food blog, Crumbs, at uiargonaut.com/crumbs. Like Crumbs on Facebook and follow at UICrumbs on Twitter and Pinterest for new recipes every week.
To stay up to date on everything Idaho athletics, check out Vandal Nation at thevandalnation.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/Idaho Vandals, and certainly check us out on Twitter at Vandal Nation.
And don't forget about the University of Idaho student magazine.
Leprechauns are said to hide pots of gold at the ends of rainbows. If you're lucky, you'll find one pot in your life. Blot comes out twice a semester, and it's as close as your nearest newsstand or your computer. Go with the sure thing. Go with Blot. Find your pot of gold at blot.uidaho.edu.
Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to KOI News. I'm Dylan Brown. Have a great Wednesday.